11th year, I'm sorry.
Hi, this is Kelly Lally, and I'm in Cave City, Kentucky, talking with Mr. Henry Scott about his work with the CCC. Today is June the 11th, 1987. When were you born, Mr. Scott?
When and where?
When were you born and where?
Murray, Kentucky, January the 12th, 1902. There was a 9-inch snow on the ground when I was born, but the doctor lived right across the street. So my wife and I both, I mean my mother and his wife, and I was a baby, but made it fine. So we lived on from there peacefully. No brothers, no sisters.
How long did you live in Murray?
Through high school days. I attended college, started going to college before Murray State was ever dreamed of. It was just a pipe dream in somebody's eyes, you know, probably. But it's a fine school and beautiful. Have you ever seen it?
Yes, sir. I went to Tennessee Tech, which is at the same conference.
Nice campus, very nice place. Certainly put Murray on the map. I never did attend there. But I was in three colleges, Emory in Atlanta, where I got my BS degree. I wanted to study medicine, but my mother talked me out of it. She thought it was too difficult in life. Maybe she was right. I probably wouldn't be sitting here. But I love medicine. I like working on people and helping them, you know. But I went ahead and majored in chemistry, which wasn't an easy subject. I taught chemistry a while, and then I took up my commission again and went back into the service. That was before World War II. And, well, let's see. I was assigned to a 3C company down in Benton, Kentucky. You know where Benton is? It's in Marshall County, halfway between my home of Murray, Kentucky, and Paducah. It's on the railroad. So that's where I was for about 6 or 8 months. Then they decided to begin opening these camps out here. I was just giving you a little rundown.
That's fine.
Background, you see, on how I happened to get here.
That's fine.
So the Army was entrusted with the business of setting up all the camps. Well, we didn't have many at first, but it was wonderful training for our armed forces, the Army in this case, because they had to deal with the, well, all the foodstuffs and clothing and everything, preparation, and finally building barracks. The first place out here was Camp Number 1 on this side of the river. And it was a place which was established by a bunch of Louisville businessmen as a place to come and get away from it all out there. I never saw it, but it was in operation. But they made a camp out of that, Camp Number 1 it was called. And when I went there, I was one of the junior officers. It was a man from Louisville who was company commander. And he finally washed up and washed out, and they made me company commander. But when I first went there, we had Negroes in the camp. And there was one barracks full of Negroes. And the rest of the boys were from the mountains of eastern Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
And they just didn't like Negroes, period, you know. And one night they ran them all out of camp. Yes, it's the truth, I'm not exaggerating. And they went in every which direction. They were afraid to go to Brownsville, afraid to get killed over there. So we had a heck of a time running them down, fighting them, and they didn't want to come back to camp. But we finally got them all herded back in camp with the exception of two, and they just vowed up and down that they wouldn't go back for fear they'd be killed. So we finally established peace in the camp. But I want to tell you, it was no small battle. We were lucky nobody got seriously hurt. But those boys, they just chased them out.
So that was that Camp Number 1?
Camp Number 1,
MP1.
Yeah. It was more or less of a semi-temporary setup there then. First, when I went there, they were building the new barracks. Mm-hmm. As I said, I was down in Benton, where we'd already built barracks and were living in them. Officers, barracks, quarters, and all the cadets had plenty of room. So we had the camp eventually all built just like the others. But it was a temporary affair. They had a clubhouse out there, which they left standing. And he used that for the officers' quarters. And then the cadets, all as we would call them, were living in tents while they were getting this camp built. And they were lucky in throwing it up, and it turned out to be as good as any of the camps. So when I was transferred there, we had gotten into part of the barracks. And we had about 200 men all together. Most of the companies out there averaged around between 200 and 250. They fluctuated because some of the boys would go home, didn't like it, you know, and they had to send part of their money to their dependent relatives, parents, or what have you. So it wasn't much, but then the boy couldn't build himself up to be even first sergeant, and that wasn't much either, $45 a month. Now, first sergeant in the Army gets more than I ever got as a first lieutenant back then. Boy, well, the Army is a great place to be now, and you know that most esprit de corps and the morale is marvelous. I don't know whether you've had an opportunity to observe it or not, but I'd just like to add this a little bit. I don't want to get out started on it, but I think now that everybody's happy. For a while there, things were pretty blue, you know. Everybody wanted to grow a beard. Resent the present status quo at that time. I just loathed them.
I'm glad I don't have a beard.
Came with a mustache. You couldn't even see mine.
You can just barely see mine.
You're doing pretty good. Are you married?
No, sir. No, I'm single.
How long have you remained single for? Didn't like
I,
a young boy.
I can run fast.
What?
I can run fast.
Oh, you must. Well, you don't know what you're running away from. God bless the ladies.
So
I was an only child.
I'm an only child.
Were you really?
Yes.
And your parents are still living?
Yes.
How marvelous. My mother lived to be 83. My father died of a heart attack when he was 57. They're both buried in Maury, and we go back down there about once a year on Decoration Day just to drop by and leave some flowers, you know. And a lot of my relatives are buried there. So, well, to make a long story short, I had an aunt living in Maury, and I was at Benton at first, as I said. But I'd take my weekend leave and run up to Maury to see my aunt Lottie. And she was as deaf as a post. I can hear a lot better than she did. She wouldn't use a hearing aid. She was too. They just been built, you know. I mean, the first ones weren't nearly as good as they are today. But she wouldn't have one. She had a trumpet. You ever see? Well, Aunt Lottie, God bless her. But when she got onto a joke, she never stopped laughing. She was genuine good sport. She lived to be 94. My dad was only 57, though, when he died. That was before the day of cars. We didn't even have paved streets in Maury. And he had to walk back and forth to his hardware and furniture store business. And then in those days, they didn't have lunch places where you could drop in. And he didn't take his lunch. He'd walk home at lunch. They'd go back to the store and then be there until 5:30. So it was quite an ordeal. He had to be a gardener. He wanted to have a garden. He just overworked himself. Don't find anybody doing that today.
Not many people.
Not many.
What year did you enter the CCC?
What?
What year did you go into the CCC?
Oh, 1933.
You started the beginning?
Right at its inception, yes. You know, Roosevelt was responsible for that, and one of the best things he ever did. It made fine young men out of thousands of boys. At one time, we had over 350,000 in the three C's. Camps all over, you know, clear out in the Northwest and everywhere else. We used to send a lot of boys from this section of the country out to the camps in Washington, Oregon, and Idaho, some of the other western states. But I was in Camp 1, as I said, just a while until Camp 4 was established across the river. And they made me company commander. So the Army had a very, very, in a way it was tough, but we managed to work it out successful. Might say preamble or whatever you want to call it, getting the job started. But we had a wonderful cooperation from civilians. The civilian end of the three C's, they were the ones who got the work done, the boys. We had a rock quarry out there in the park, and one of our cadet groups worked in that exclusively. And they excavated and dug and crushed rock for roads, the first roads which were built around in the park to mount anything.
Uh-huh.
They weren't blacktop like they are now. But they did a noble job in getting out dead trees and all of those things which hinder forestry progress, you know. And I enjoyed Camp 4 very much. I must tell you this is really on the QT, but you might as well add a little humor because it's the God's truth. I don't make up these stories.
That's fine.
The boys had some girlfriends over there in some of the cottages on the reservation and never had been forced to move out. And a lot of them would take some of the boys' laundry. and do it for them. You know, they charge maybe 5 or 10 cents a shirt, something like that. Well, anyhow, one of the boys cleaned laundry, became infested with bed bugs. Did you ever see one?
No, I haven't seen one.
That was my first experience. And one other one said something, but I'll tell you about that later. And so they got in all the barracks, and I've never seen anything multiply. A computer isn't anything compared to those bed bugs. You could pick up a steel cot, one end of it, and drop it on the floor in the barracks, and just hundreds of them would drop off of the cot underneath. It's steel, you know, where they're nested, or they don't nest really, but they increase their families down.
Oh,
and they have a terrible smell. If you'll pardon my reference to something about human excrement, they smell just like human urine. No, I'm not kidding. I'm not saying to be funny, but it was horrible.
Oh.
And that was one characteristic that they displayed that I never heard of any other insect having that characteristic, but they certainly did. So we had to take everything out of the barracks because it already spread. It spread so rapidly. And air, and we used sulfur candles by the box load, you know, trying to kill them in all the barracks. We finally got rid of them. But I want you to know that was one of the worst things I ever encountered.
Oh.
And we laid the law down. No more laundry work in the park.
Right.
I'll never forget. Well, you have another question.
How long did you stay in? Did you stay in all of the time?
In the Three Seas?
Uh-huh.
A little over 4 years.
Uh-huh.
I was transferred. They finally decided that it is, despite your good records, they want to move us around, just like they still do today in the armed forces. So they moved me down to my last assignment, which was at Clinton, Kentucky. You heard of Clinton, haven't you?
Yes.
It's near Real Foot Lake.
Yes, sir.
And a nice little town, but a hard place to find a home for your family.
Right.
So my daughter was born there in Mayfield. Mayfield, Kentucky is the county seat of Graves County, about halfway between Murray and Clinton. And Merrill was born in that hospital there, Fuller Gillum Hospital. And there was March 8, 1937. And it was a very exciting moment.
Yes, sir.
She got along beautifully.
So did you?
Well, we lived there until my last orders expired, and I went back into civilian life. I wanted to finish my education. So I went back to Emory, and I decided I liked Georgia so well at that time, and I wanted to stay in Georgia and practice law. So I practiced, I transferred from Emory Law School to Georgia. I had 4 quarters at Emory, and I took 5 quarters, 9 quarters is what it takes, 3 years. And I spent 5 quarters in Georgia, and then graduated in August 1938. And I'll tell you a little bit about that. President Roosevelt came down that hot weather. It was about 102 out there on the athletic field. And they had the commencement out on the athletic field. You know, he was crippled. So they drove his car right onto the football field, and he got out, and they had a rank belt. And our graduating class was sitting out there with their caps and gowns on. We took all of our coats off, and some of them had their shirts off. Boy, it was hot at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon on that particular day. So. But he was very gracious. The news people wanted to get some pictures, and some didn't get a picture. So he went to the podium where they put the gown on him, you know, over his head, bestowed the doctors of law degrees from Georgia. He went and did that 3 times down there in that hot sun to help some photographers that hadn't gotten for their publications. I thought that was pretty nice. He didn't have to do it, but he did. He just laughed. And so we sat there and sweltered and applauded. But we got our old dips. Oh, that was some experience. I finished at the end of summer school, I said, August 38. Well, so much for that episode. Then I had to come home and study for the state bar exam in Kentucky. And I spent from August until December studying and reviewing and getting ready for that. And I took it, Frankfort, passed it, made third highest grade out of 110 boys. Not boys, we were all young men. So that made me feel real good.
Oh, yeah.
So I wasn't a millionaire when I quit practicing law, but I had a good practice, and I was city judge over here, paid about $150 a month. Well, I didn't buy your bread and water, but I had my offices in Glasgow. And I loved my work over there, and I had been planning to run for office. But when I left there, I closed my law office and going back to service again. And that was World War II coming up. And I left a sign on the door, gone to the Army. Well, the draft hadn't gotten started by that time. But when I came back Christmas, it had. First few draftees had been called, and fellows were reporting to the Army here and there and other branches. So somebody wrote a sign and put it right under my sign where I had gone to the Army, and they put on there, so what? But I was quite a character, you know, at that time. Myself and about a doctor on there, Captain York. And he is a Captain York Jr. over there now, but it was his father. And we two were the first two, officers ordered to duty. Myself as a line officer and him as a doctor. Well, so much for that.
What were your duties as camp commander? What did you do?
As camp commander? Mm-hmm. Well, I had you said you knew Joe Kaliza.
Yes, sir.
I had the best company clerk that God ever put on a, you might say, job in the three C's or anywhere else. He was wonderful. And I had all my boys in that company in camp number 4 from Indiana. I mean, I didn't tell you that, but they were with a fair few exceptions. Every one of them were just outstanding. Some of them were very brilliant. I had a good first sergeant, Jim Lampkins, remember old Jim, and a lot of the first cook, Louis Dees. he could really turn out a meal, and the boys knew it too. They wanted to all be in my company. Well, I stayed there until I was transferred down to Clinton, Kentucky. I was on the way out, and somebody else succeeded me. I've forgotten, I don't know who it was, in camp number 4. And I don't recall who the officers were. I do, the company commander in camp number 2, which was on this side of the river with number 1. And he was from Louisville, Kentucky. Wouldn't mind telling you his name. His name was Kirkendall. You'll find his name in the records somewhere. He was a fine officer, captain. I was just the first lieutenant in my company. And we were still wearing boots. Well, I hid them. You know, they looked pretty nice, but boy, it was a job to dress and undress. But we had nice facilities, everything, good waterworks, good bathrooms, anything you ask. We had, and all the boys had been trained, some of them had had a little training, not Army training, but training somewhere along the line, and they came to us partially equipped. Well, maybe at Fort Knox, they took a bunch of boys up there and broke them in before they assigned them to companies. But we get a whole train load sometimes of new men for the 4 companies. And they were, this one went to company Camp 1, some to Camp 2, some to Camp 3, and my company Camp 4. They were replacements, you see. And some they we had to let go because we were unhappy and dissatisfied. But have you ever heard the term store-bought bread?
No.
Well,
yeah.
A lot of these kids have never seen a bake shop. Things were so hard up. That's during the Depression now, my dear. I remember, things weren't like they are today. Bread was 10 cents a loaf if you could find any. And so, as soon as these boys could go to town, like a Stearns or some other town, Hazard or Harlem, somewhere in Eastern Kentucky, they wanted to buy some store-bought bread. 10 cents a loaf. And of course, they got, privates got $30, and first sergeant got $45. And there were other scales of pay in between. And they had to send part of that money home to their dependents. So they got to keep a little bit of it every payday for minor expenditure. And of course everything was frozen, so they didn't have much to spend for except cigarettes. And they got them for 10 cents a package then, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and not many of them smoked, I'm glad to say, but a few did. Not like it is today. So now what?
So what did you do as camp commander?
Pardon?
What did you do as camp commander? As camp commander, did you get food?
What did I do at the camp? Yes, a little more detail. Well, the company commander was financially responsible for preparation of the payroll each month, mm-hmm. and they had to sign the payroll just like it did in the Army. In fact, we used Army forms for nearly everything, and it was good, really good training for the boys because they got to be familiarized with different forms that were official then in the armed forces. But the company commander was the one who held the company money bags, and we'd pay them. We had to keep account of all the little deductions that we'd made, had to make during the month, take out for that the pay table. Then he was also responsible. I had a mess officer, as we call them. You know what a mess officer is, in charge of food. And we had to go up to Fort Knox once a month to draw our supply of foods. And what we got was usually about $2,000 to $2,500 worth of foodstuffs. We bought our perishables from over in Glasgow for the produce over there. There was a St. John, St. Charles place over there. And the Brown Ice Cream Company supplied us with all of our dairy products, milk and ice cream and sherbet. And every time we gave a little informal dates, the Browns, Mr. and Mrs. Brown, who owned the ice cream place, came over and decorated the barracks and the club room and furnished all the refreshments free of charge. Now, wasn't that nice? And they paid for part of the orchestra. So that helped us out. The boys didn't have much money. And that about once a month during the season when we had dances. And then on top of that, I had to check all, take an inventory of the food every month, what I had left before we went to Fort Knox. But we ordered our beef from an armor and company salesman who came by once a week over there, and they got our meat out of Louisville. So it was all choice. And we didn't use good grade either. Use choice, you know there's a difference.
Yes, sir.
If you bought a steak with only good grades, you got something that you can hardly chew, maybe. And we had excellent meat, and pork and everything else. Was the boys had good food, and if you had good cooks, it was wonderful. So then on top of that, the company commander was responsible for discipline. He couldn't see to it all by himself, but the first sergeant and the platoon sergeants and all cooperated, and we had very few problems that way. We had one, well, I won't call the man's name because he's dead now, but he was one of our foremen.
Would you all want some water?
No, thank you.
I don't believe so. Thank you just the same.
He was a civilian, one of the foremen. So each camp had seven or eight foremen and the camp superintendent. And I had a wonderful superintendent. He died here about two or three years ago. Prestonburg, Kentucky, Homer Salisbury.
Yes, sir.
His name ain't ringing any bells. I mean, you've seen it.
I've heard the name, yes.
Homer was great. We loved him. And he was there the whole time I was there. He knew boys. He didn't have any boys. He had two little girls. But he knew children. And we just got along fine with the kids. And turned out one of the best work jobs, I think, of any of the camps around. So, but had to work together. In some camps, they couldn't do it. Some of the people in the Army, involved, I don't think it was the civilians' fault, but some of the people were just a little bit obstinate. They wanted to be a whole hog or nothing at all, you know. But the superintendent had his share of responsibilities, too. So we had to work together, and we did. My camp got along fine. And, from Taps to Reveille, that's about the only time the company commander had any time to play a hand of bridge or listen to something. And we didn't have television, remind you. Unheard of. There was just a dream in somebody's mind. But once finally did put it in place, we were lucky to have a radio. Well, we never did have any parades in town. On 4th of July, they didn't acquire that of the boys. Or Decoration Day, we celebrated out at camp, but they wouldn't come in town. And on Saturday night, we had a movie here, which had carried good shows. And we sent two truck loads in every Saturday night. We had to cross the river down there, see, you know, on the ferry.
Yes, sir.
I'll tell you something about that, too.
Okay.
And our doctor, he's dead now. He was from Indiana, God bless him. His name was Pepper. Doc wasn't married, he liked to drink. And my junior officer, Lieutenant Little, second lieutenant, he liked to drink too. Well, they went off on the 4th, different tangents. We each had a car, and one went one way. Well, they both happened to come back, land down there at the ferry early that evening on the 4th, and it had been raining. And Pepper was trying to get on the ferry to go on back to camp. And the cadets were all on the other side waiting to come to town. Well, anyway, Lieutenant Little drove up behind Pepper and hit his car, purposely, I think.
Yes, sir.
And it was as muddy as you can imagine. And they got out of both cars. I happened to be out there and saw it and tried to bring it up. They got out and fought in that mud. I was glad nobody took any pictures.
Yes.
But they soon got up, went back to camp, took about three shower beds and apologized, and it was all right. But it took quite a while for them to get that. Well, that was just one of the side episodes,
that's
you know.
Fine.
But it was fun. It wasn't too funny, but it turned out to be funny later.
Did you ever have any, did you all have discipline problems at all?
Pardon?
Did you have any discipline problems at all?
In camp? Just minor.
What kind?
Most of the boys were real good boys. Home, I mean, families that had disciplined their children. And the boys were there not to make a farce out of it. 98% of them were there to really try to help their parents. People were almost destitute, you know. No jobs, no money. And so the government was able to put a little money into their pockets through these cadets who were working. And no discipline in our matter was, well, I'd say it was just about 100% cooperation everywhere. Nobody came squealing on somebody, not that type of discipline. If we didn't see it, we didn't hear about it sometimes. And we had practically no fights, except that Negro episode that I mentioned. And I don't think they ever even laid hands on them. They ran some fights.
Aside from that one incident,
what?
Aside from that one incident you said with the Negro camp, did you have any more problems between the races? Any more racial tension?
No, we didn't have any serious problems. And as far as people over in Brownsville were concerned, they didn't go there much, but they were real nice to the kids. We sent them go there once in a while, but they didn't have a movie. There wasn't anything else to go to. The drugstore, and that was about all. But the drugstore stayed open until 10:30 on Saturday night, so they could go in there to the movie. We didn't have all these fast food places. That wasn't even thought of it. Wendy's and what have
you. Yes.
Oh, boy. Well, they're getting a dose of it now. So.
What kind of things did you all do for fun?
For fun?
For
well, we had ball team now, yes. Athletics. We had two that we participated in. We inherited some good basketball players who had started off in high school, you know. But we had to play outdoors, except when we went somewhere. And gyms was few and far between then. It's not like it is today. Every little side of Crossroads School has a gym, you know, in some sort. Uh-huh. And they'd play in those and practice. So we didn't have anything like that. But they were good shots. And so we didn't win any championship tournaments, but it put them in a winning sense, you know, and something to think about and talk about. And they really rooted for their camp team. Then we had a good baseball team, too. And it turned out the same way. And we'd see if it didn't work on Saturday. It's a five-day week, just like it is now. So they could go somewhere and play on Saturday and or Sunday if the other town's team could play on Sunday. Well, they'd meet them on Sunday if they'd rather, or usually on Saturday, preferably. Then they'd not go too far away. We'd go to, well, towns within 2 or 3 hour drive, like Elizabethtown and Bardstown and Hodgenville, and towns that you know, and Scottsville, Kentucky, and, I said Brownsville, yes, and a few others. They'd go there and we'd meet their teams. So that was fun, and of course some of us had to go along, but I enjoyed it. But we couldn't take, we didn't have but two trucks.
You ever been to Bardstown, Kentucky?
Yes.
You ever been to New York City?
Never been to New York City.
School buses out either.
So how did you all travel?
Truck, just plain old dump trucks. With a top part just keep them dry on top. So take it off during the week whenever you get in the camp work, you know.
Uh-huh.
But if it did rain, they were protected. And we had seats in the dump truck, so we could take care of it. We hauled about 30. A few had to sit on the floor, but we couldn't help that. We'd have row seats down each side. And they enjoyed it. It was a change.
Well, the Army trucks are
civilian. And the manager of the theater here made a special price. Well, his top price was only 25 cents, but he let the cadets in for a dime.
Oh, well, that's nice.
I thought that was nice.
Did a lot
every
of them
time
go?
They came in town. Because he knew how much money and how little they had. And he was he was my brother-in-law to me.
Did a lot of the boys participate in that? A lot of them go to the movie?
The show?
Yes, sir.
Yes, they did, because there wasn't too much to do around camp at night. And
Okay, this is the second
I'm
side.
I'm not looking for a job. I just
this is the second side of the tape of my interview with Mr.
Henry
Scott.
But it's a pleasure to do everything I can to help you.
Oh, you're doing just
now,
fine.
What next?
Did you have much interaction with the people in the nearby towns?
What?
Did you have much interaction with the people in the nearby towns in the local area?
No, they accepted the boys with open arms.
Did they?
And we'd even let a few come in town to church. We had services, religious services on Sunday morning. We had chaplains, but we didn't have enough chaplains to have one for every camp. There's just not that many God's men. We couldn't find them. But they were commissioned, you know. Most of them were first lieutenants. We had some nice ones too. And some of the older ones was ministers who'd taken the job to help out with the three C's. And they'd been in World War One, I think. Over that time, World War One wasn't too far removed, mm-hmm. like it is today. Mm-hmm. Well, even World War Two finally came along, where World War One was a number of years back, you know, over 1918, 1919, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we had, they welcomed them to church, and we even had two or three who liked to attend Sunday school. So we let them go through, and then they'd stay for service. And we sent a vehicle of some kind in. We had a few pickup trucks, and we had a very good maintenance department. He could fix anything. And had a lot of servicing, too, you know. Had about 10, 11 trucks, dump trucks and other kinds, and but no buses. So we were handicapped that way. But we got by, though, and didn't think anything about it. We didn't know how good it was going to be next 30 years.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
How did the people feel about the park?
What?
How did the people in the area feel about the park being developed? Were they upset?
What?
How did the people in the area feel about the park being developed? Were they upset about their homes being taken down? Or?
Well, they thought it, since it was helping mankind, that it was very acceptable, and nobody complained about anything to me or us. We never had any problems that way at all.
Really?
We felt that they were just as welcome here in Cave City as a day in June. We knew that.
What about let me ask you about the people.
What?
Let me ask you about the people over in Edmondson County.
Well,
how did they feel about giving up their homes and things for the park? Did they?
Well, as long as it didn't have any Negroes, it was all right. Did you know that Edmondson County has never had a Negro resident? You didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
See, that's why they were so down on the Negroes. Uh-huh. That's why none of them went to Brownville when they left the camp. They Cape One. They went in other directions. They knew about the story out behind at Brownville that they just didn't like black people. Mm-hmm. Period. Now it's changed, I guess. A few people, but go
not there. Much.
Not much. They wasn't singing. Then they built that lovely school over there. I wondered how. I haven't been over there to see it. It must be nice.
It's a pretty school.
That
yes,
really was fine. Yeah, the Job Corps, of course, you're the old one.
Yes, sir.
My sister-in-law worked out there. You may have known her. Mrs. Doyle.
Oh,
Mary.
Yes, sir.
She retired from out there.
Yes, sir. I didn't know she was your sister.
Yeah, she's my wife's younger junior sister.
Oh, your wife's your sister-in-law then. Yes,
yeah,
sir. I see.
5 years younger than my wife.
Huh.
She's 65, I believe. She doesn't look it. Don't tell her. Anyhow, Mary's okay. She's
yes,
fine.
Sir.
And she was one of the best secretaries I think they felt like any of them did that they had on the job out there.
Uh-huh.
She wouldn't quit until our job was finished for that day.
Right.
And she managed to get out there on the coldest day. She'd take the road from here down to Park City instead of going out on 70. She'd never have gotten out there, you know.
Uh-huh.
Halfway clean at all, but it wasn't safe. So she'd go down to Park City and take the road, which was usually cleaned off out past Diamond Caverns, you know, and she could get out there that way.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't miss many days. And then there was a man who lived next door to us who was one of the guard, I guess you might say he was a guide, till he lost his limb. Well, he lives here. He lives next door to her in King City. He helped to get out there a few times. He had a Volkswagen, and he never seemed let anything stop him. So she didn't miss many days. But she liked the job.
Yes.
She had a little Social Security from other sources, and she had her civil service before out there. So she's not doing too badly.
Yes.
She says she didn't know what she's going to do, though. Taxes go up anyhow. Boy, I paid my first tax on a new car up here in Kentucky a year ago in May. when we bought it.
Yes, sir.
I can't understand the sales tax situation up here. Ever since Happy Chandler was gone there. You know, they repealed it on everything except automobiles. You didn't know that, did you?
No.
Well, it had everything taxed. There was a man from a town over in Madisonville, Kentucky, named Mr. Ruby LaFoon.
LaFoon, yes.
You've heard of Ruby. Well, he was a pretty good governor, but his name just made him a subject for fun. And Happy was his lieutenant governor. And they had passed the sales tax law in Mr. LaFoon's administration. Happy ran on the next platform to be elected, and he was. Repeal of all sales tax. They repealed it on everything, my dear, but automobiles. Could easy to collect, the big lump sums, you see.
Right.
And to this dying day, you pay sales tax on a car, which I think is the most inequitable thing if you're putting a little jam in sidewise. To have to pay sales tax on the 10th trade of a car, even if that's exaggerating it somewhat. Might not be but $5 sales tax, but you'd have to pay it. Either the borrower would have to pay it. Mm-hmm. And the county and state would get their cut. They're still doing it. So it's a very vast source of income to the state now. In large, my sales tax on my car was nearly $700.
Wow.
Imagine that.
Yes, sir.
And I had a man who bought one of these extra special vans, these new type vans,
uh-huh.
And his sales tax was $2,200. That's hard to conceive. I think he had everything on it. He's one of the policemen here.
You ought to be able to buy a car for that, shouldn't you?
Why?
I say you should be able to buy a car for $2,200.
Two Cadillacs. I always wanted a Cadillac, but I never did buy one. The boys asked me in camp one time, said, Colonel, why don't you get a Cadillac? I said, listen, if I bought a Cadillac, they'd either fire me or figure they'd better raise my salary. One of the They were cheaper then than they are today.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah.
About 25, 26, 27,000, you know. Well, that's nice, but they get old just like other cars.
Mm-hmm.
Would you mind handing me my little cup, please?
Oh, certainly.
Just my throat's a little dry.
Yes.
Thank you. It's ice water it was.
Take your break if you want to. Kind of rest your throat.
How successful do you feel the CCC? Was the CCC successful in?
Successful?
In relieving the effects of the depression.
Oh, do I think so?
Yes.
As a whole, yes, indeed, I certainly do. I think it was one of the most effective things that this country had ever promulgated or put itself into feeling. And there wasn't any graft in it either, my dear, not a bit. Everybody earned what they got, and. We saw that the boys didn't have any complaints and they had good medical attention. We take boy got the least bit sick with the flu, we'd take him right up to Fort Knox to the hospital. And we had an ambulance out here, he said, an army ambulance. And we could, they got sick just, well, I contracted the flu out there in camp number 4. Had a real, honest to God, bona fide case. Nowadays, the flu is nothing compared to the way it was then. And I almost went into pneumonia. So they rushed me up there and I was there for about 10 days. I had wonderful care, and the boys got the same if they had to go up there.
Uh-huh.
But we never did have any great big flu epidemic like they did prior to this. Mm-hmm. So many people died, you know, World War I from the original influenza attacks. Didn't have the drugs. In fact, penicillin was even unheard of. They were working on it.
Do you think the CCC helped the local area, their economy in the local area around the caves?
What kind of area?
The economy, the...
Did I help it? It would have helped more in that respect. We would like to have bought a lot of local produce, corn and other vegetables, green beans, peas, anything they grew, you know, but even down to radishes, things like that. But they didn't go into it on a large enough scale to even furnish one company. You take 250 boys, it takes a lot of food to satisfy them. And we might exhaust their supply for 3 weeks, just one camp buying them out. So we couldn't do much to want anything else. They didn't have meat stuffs or things, and to go into a local grocery store, they just weren't able to cope with it. And we had to buy through the quartermaster up there at Fort Knox. and they always had what we ordered, and they'd get it ready before we got there. We'd call them or mail it in the next month's supply, and they'd have everything stocked, counted and checked, and sitting there on the floor waiting for us to come up with our truck. And then we'd sit there and check it all, and turn and go to the hospital, get a few medical supplies, and then come on back. I'd take the supply sergeant with me, and then we had a truck driver too. So yes, we would like to have done more. It was, in fact, it just I can't say it. We helped it very much financially. The only thing we did was spend a little money in the stores here over the weekend at night in the movies, okay, which was trivial. They didn't have it to spend, and we couldn't buy foodstuffs on the scale that we needed to get them, you know. So I think they understood. We tried to explain it clear to them why we weren't buying any more from them. Mm-hmm. In fact, we take a supply of bread, maybe. Well, the bread truck came out there every other day and took a lot of bread for those boys.
Sure.
And they really ate it. Well, some of them would eat a half a loaf. One time.
In one setting.
They loved it.
Yes.
Never got tired of it. We had kids who came in there as thin as a whale. And it was a pleasure to see them building up and increasing in weight and muscle and everything. They got fed well. They had the very best of attention. Well, what else?
What do you think was the greatest contribution of the CCC?
The greatest contribution? Well, it varied from locality to locality. Out here in the park, it was very visible what they did. So much of their works remained to be seen by their successors. And I guess there are a few things out there still which they excelled in and did, and helped out considerably, helped the park get its feet on the ground more. And it didn't cost the park 1 cent out of their budget either to do it, because they were paying for it out of the appropriation to run and operate the 3 C's. And the boys learned a lot. They got paid that way, besides a little trivial
right.
pay. And a lot of them, it ended up with good jobs. And then, of course, World War II had to come along, and a lot of those boys had been so well trained, discipline-wise, and how to run a company as a company clerk or assistant clerk or different jobs in and around the Cape, that they just fell right into a slot in the armed forces and made some of the best soldiers that the country's ever seen. And a lot of them went in. A lot of them didn't come back either, you know. It's always that part. And I love my boys. I still young from them. Pardon me.
That's okay.
Certainly.
I lost a cousin in the Battle of the Bulge. I lost a cousin in the Battle of the Bulge.
I wasn't in that one, but I was in North Africa. Of course, I said Rommel was some, he was a really a soldier. Yes. Had to give him credit. Oh, I'll never forget it. We didn't need many clothes. Now what?
Were there any problems with the CCC?
Pardon?
Were there any problems with the CCC?
Any problems?
Yeah.
Well, they were so few that they were trivial.
Uh-huh.
In fact, a few of the boys finally found wives when they got out and married. They didn't marry some North Korean or South Korean.
Yes.
Like a few of them do, you know. But I hope they're happy. But I mean, I think it may have resulted in a few matches like that. But no problems. The boys, most of them left sisters at home, and they had a great deal of respect for ladies and girls, proper kind. They never heard of them going out on any wild escapades like so many are prone to do. And of course, there wasn't anything like that around the Cave City of Brownsville
right.
for them to play tally-ho with.
Did you ever go to what they call the Whoopee House out there?
Sorry,
did you ever go to what they call the Whoopee House over on Flint Ridge?
No, I know.
You know, but the recreation hall?
Yes. Yeah, right, that's right.
A lot of the boys talk about...
I hardly ever... See, I was dating my wife-to-be, and I couldn't come in town very often. And I usually made a beeline for Cave City when it was my night off. And I'd get back by 11:30 to Cave. Had tried to every night. And I, of course, left the company in good hands. The first sergeant was there. He didn't come in town when I stayed. And I had two junior officers, and Lieutenant George Ingram, you don't know him, but he was from Eastern Kentucky, and he'd been in the regular Army as an enlisted man over in Hawaii for several years, and he was one of the finest men I ever had, but he'd gotten a commission, and George was wonderful. Anybody could have trusted him with a battalion and wouldn't have had any problem. So I had a good man in him, and I had him till I left there. He was still there. And he took over the company, I think, after I left. But he was very deserving. And I used to correspond with him a little bit. And Mr. Salisbury from Prestonburg, I used to correspond with him. He died here just 2 or 3 years ago. Had a charming wife, she died, and two little girls. One married, husband died about a year after. That's if they were married. They never didn't know what his trouble was. We ran into her down in Vanderbilt. I was a patient down there in the hospital later on, and she was doing work, social work in the hospital at Vanderbilt. And it was such a pleasure to see the kid. Uh-huh. She was just about 6 or 7 years of age, and I hadn't seen her after she left here. So it made it nice for me especially.
Did the boys ever play any pranks on each other?
Yes, they did a few. Nothing serious, though.
What kind?
They'd put a lizard in somebody's bed. Harmless, you know. How would you feel?
I'd get out of the bed, I believe.
That's just nothing serious. And sometimes they'd get to catch a bullfrog. You know, there was some out there up and down the river. And they'd bring them in and hide them in under the boy's bunk between the between the sheets.
Oh, yuck.
A bullfrog wouldn't hurt anything but a fly.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't like them. Is there anything you'd like to ask, Bob?
No, we appreciate you giving us the time to talk to you this
morning. Well, I'm afraid I've run it in the ground.
No, you haven't. You've done exactly what we hoped you would, and that's reminisce with us.
I gave you the facts and didn't exaggerate anything. Some of it was a little bit somber, but most of it was on the pleasant side.
Yes, sir.
And I hope what I've said will be well taken wherever it's used or publicized, because I only had love for the three C's. And I might have been without a job, too. If I hadn't had a commission, we fellows in the Army, they took us all, you know. You see, the regular Army just didn't have enough men to man all these companies. The 1st Cavalry really was a horse cavalry, the last horse cavalry to be disbanded. And they called it the 1st Cavalry Mechanized, finally, out of Marfa, Texas. And all of their officers came to Fort Knox and gave up the horses out in Texas and went to semi-motorization. And before they had the tanks or anything like that, just trucks and various motor vehicles. And they were company commanders, or they took some of us to try to help us out at first. And then they gradually pulled themselves out, went back to their assignments in the Army, mm-hmm. and left us running the three C's. So we had good help from the 1st Cavalry. They were exclusively in charge for the Army, all over the country, mind you. And when it got to all those camps, I've forgotten the exact number, except that I did recall to you the approximate total, about 350,000 boys. Took a lot to feed them.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now that helped the economy in many ways, nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see why we couldn't do much locally. In fact, we couldn't have even bought milk enough. We had to have pasteurized milk, and nobody except Browns, in our case then, could supply it.
Mm-hmm.
And they put it up in pints for us, and then brought it in bulk in large cans for cooking. That was, so it was a lot of wonderful experiences, and as I said, I still hear from a handful of the boys. And I've quit writing letters, but once in a while somebody will call me,
uh-huh.
and I love to talk to them.
Yes, sir.
I can't hear too well sometimes. This phone here is fairly good, but it's not as good as it could be,
right.
especially with someone with a hearing problem.
Right.
Well,
but we manage somehow.
Yes, sir.
Pay $20 a month for what?
Yeah.
That's the truth. You know, I'm not kidding, including all the taxes. These lines they charge you now. Have you ever seen a telephone bill today?
Yes.
Right.
It's South Central Rural. Well, they've got Bell telephones better off now than they were before they split them up.
Mm-hmm.
They've got all line charges for this and that. Mm-hmm. They've concocted everything. So I guess they're still paying dividends on the old lady's stock, as they used to call it.
Yes, that's right.
Helen, well, she was, she's gone. She's been up.
That's okay. Well, I'm going to turn this off now.
Didn't have time to come in.